Hello, I'm Alora Odell, and I'm the host of Write Your Story, Heal Your Life Summit. And we are well into the summit now. And I'm just really honored and really excited that I get to have one of my dearest, closest friends from over 30 years to interview today. And my friend, who's a successful entrepreneur and writer and photographer and event planner and has created incredible things, including Yoga Connects Yoga Festival. And my friend is Sally Griffin.
And it's darling.
Yeah, we can be darling because we are darling to each other.
Yeah.
And it's just gone 11 a.m. here, but you're in London. So it's a bit later there, and we were just talking before we went on air that you usually have more things behind you on your walls, but you're currently having your beautiful apartment in a lovely part of London that I love, renovated right now. So
yes, I am. It normally would have stuff, plants behind, things on that shelf. I mean, really, it looks so bare to me, but anyway. So I'm not normally so corporate looking, if you know what I mean. And it's got usually shamanic stuff, masks and all of that kind of thing behind. So it's hilarious looking at this. But this is my renovation. Yes, I'm in mid-renovation, mid-dust.
And I remember you bought that apartment when you were jumping into your company Property Transformations because you spent some time being a property developer and entrepreneur. And you were doing that, but you also continued writing and you continued your creative life. And doing Property Transformations is very much creative. And I want to talk to you today about all of it. Being an entrepreneur, you've really been an entrepreneur all your adult life. I met you. How old were you when I met you?
I was 23 and you were 22 and we met in a toilet in London. I could go on.
Well, actually not in the cubicle, but outside the toilet. Yeah, we could go on. And that was it.
Two of my best friends in my life I met in that moment in that toilet. Which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Like, you think about karma and the paths that we make. And if I have to think, like, I've just seen the other one, Sarah, you know, in Ireland. Right. And how insane is that, that we met actually at a gig, your gig, in the toilet? I was in the toilet. So, and I had a broken arm.
Right.
And you helped me with stuff in the toilet.
Okay, you said, can you help me? And I said, well, I can't, not really, but I have a friend who can really help what you want to do. And that was, and I think I was going back on stage because I was in a band. I haven't told
you were. And I was trying to, dare I say, roll a joint with a hand.
Yeah, I wasn't going to expose you too much, but yeah. And I said, I can't help you because I don't smoke pot. And I've never rolled a joint.
She sure has.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really useless in that department. So that was it. We've been friends ever since, but we've really been more than friends. We've really been dear sisters. And for a few years, we actually did a company together, Sacred Journeys for Women. Yeah. And we took women on retreats and pilgrimages to sacred sites. And mainly in Europe, England, Britain, and Ireland, and we had a great time. And then we went off to do different things. I continued that, and you went into yoga, and you did these amazing yoga retreats. And I came on at least one of them, to this one in Carcassonne, near Carcassonne, Mirepoix.
Yeah,
that was an amazing retreat. So I'd like to talk to you about being an entrepreneur. What do you really feel gave you the self-confidence to be an entrepreneur and not having a 9-to-5 job?
Well, I mean, there's an interesting story about the 9-to-5 job. I did actually have a 9-to-5 job at one point. I was trained in film, and my university degree, the first one I did, was all to do with film degree and studying to do production and all of that kind of thing from Toronto. And sort of rolling along, I realized that to be in the film world, you have to be a piece in a cog. You never see your own work, really. You end up seeing many, many pieces of the work coming together, and then there's a vision, which is amazing, but you don't see your own work. And one of the things that I think drives me, or is the confidence, if you like, is I want to see what I can do. And so, in a way, it started very early. I was working in a film production unit in London, and I had a great job, and it could have been like, and I won an award as well. I could have just followed that path. But part of it was the thing about being this piece in a cog. And I went to India when I was 26, and I was in Rajasthan. I ended up walking up a mountain, which was a Brahmin mountain, which is interesting for me to think that another key moment was actually at a Brahmin temple, and the yoga that I do is all Brahmin, and I didn't know that at the time. There's not many Brahmin temples left, and I climbed this mountain. I sat down on this at this temple in Pushkar, and all of a sudden, I had this like revelation, and it was simply this: you don't just get happiness; you have to choose it. And immediately after realizing that happiness is a choice, I thought, I can't stand working in 9-to-5. I just can't stand it. It's so restrictive and it doesn't give me any impetus or excitement. So I made a choice on that mountain to never do a 9-to-5 job. When I came down the mountain, I had like made this kind of alchemical shift on that level. I didn't know how it was going to pan out. I just knew I could never work in an office. To me, it's like sort of soul suicide, you know, working in an office. And for a lot of people, it isn't. But for me, it really is. It stifles me. I get tired. I'm never tired. And that's what's so interesting. So roll on. The next time I had, when I went down the mountain, actually, I went back to London, they'd given my job away. And I was really irritated by it. But it was just like manifested exactly what I needed to get rid of that job. And the next time I had a 9-to-5 was probably easily 14 years later, something like that. And I, again, and it was quite lucrative and it was quite, you know, sort of upmarket. I was good at it and it was overseeing thousands of photographers. And I worked in this office, which was in central London near Marble Arch. So the views were incredible. And you came up in a lift. I was given this, it was a 3-month trial. Came up in the lift. As the doors opened, there was just like a vast sea of offices, you know, of open offices, desks. And every time I would come up in this lift, I would think, like that kind of thing every time. And then I'd find my little space. I sit cross-legged. I'm sitting cross-legged right now. Lotus pose. Those are my knees. I can't sit on a normal chair ever. And I ended up remembering having this, and it was quite demanding. I had to look at thousands of photographs, but I would be finished by noon, 12 noon. And how the office worked was they slowed down their production to deal with being in an office. So everybody was slow motion and it drove me insane. I was like, chick, 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 like this. Then bored out of my skull because you couldn't actually, like you finished and do nothing or do something that you wanted to do. You had to always look fake busy. So I ended up going to Selfridges and spending all the money because it was around the corner at lunch hour. I would be drifting around the shops buying, you know, at the time I was interested in fashion, spend all my money. Then I go home in the commuter sardine route. I would drink half a bottle of wine at night and pass out in front of the TV. And that lasted for 3 months. I was exhausted. And then I remembered my commitment to never working 9-to-5. You know, and I don't drink, actually, you know, I've not really been a major drinker in my life, but I don't drink at all now by choice. But can you imagine? It was just this sardine run, this horrible time on the tube. And it just reminded me, like, God, live up to your you know, your commitments to self. And that was it. 3 months. They offered me a pay rise. They tried to get me to stay. And I was just like, no way. Get me out of here. Yeah. And that was it.
Yeah. I have a lot of respect for people who can do the 9-to-5. And I know that a lot of our viewers do the 9-to-5. And I do respect people for doing, you know, for doing that commitment. And I think that one reason that we do those jobs, and, you know, I had a 9-to-5 when I left school for a minute, was, you know, we're looking at paying our bills and sustaining our lifestyle. And I think what we're really encouraging people to do, I'm not encouraging anyone to just leave their job just like that, but really encouraging people to step into their empowerment and also to create a lifestyle that works for them. And I really believe that people can do that through their art. And you have done that through your art over and over, like reinventing yourself over and over. And for a period, you've always been a writer, but for a period, you worked intensely on books and writing books. And I think you have a couple of them right next to you, if you would love to show the audience.
Reach back and show you. they're all very alternative. I'm very proud of that. So the first one I wrote, and this was amazing, this is called Sacred Journey, and it looks like it's Sacred Journeys, but that's in Greek script, so it was meant to look sort of weird. And basically the story behind this was, I knew I wanted to write a book. And I actually want to write another book now. It's come up again and it's been sitting, hatching away. But I wasn't a writer. I was a photographer. I'd shifted out of film and I was doing the things so I could see my own product, which again was this thing that didn't work in film for me, but did work in photography. And then it was at a very interesting time in life. It was like, I just thought, I don't know what I want to write about. But one full moon, and I am, you know, heavily into shamanism and Wicca and all sorts of ritual. It was a full moon and I just thought, sit down and write this book. And that's exactly what happened. I started to write on the computer. I like writing by hand a lot as well, but this was just like, right, this is it, download. And I created the concept, which I was very interested in, sacred sites in Britain and Ireland, the mythology of them, and also what the practice that had been around them and the photography of them. So it was kind of a whole package. And I started writing, and quite honestly, it was just amazing. The next day, I had a treatment. I took it to a publisher. They said yes and gave me 14 grand to do it, like that. And I finished it in 3 months. It was just straight off. So this one, after I wrote this one, and I'm trying to remember how old I was. I think I was 41, something like that. Prior to that, I'd just wandered the world, taking photographs, being quite the, you know, free spirit. But I felt like if I have to die now, my work is done. Really. It was that kind of work. And then I got onto a bit of a roll, and people started asking me to write books after that. So one of the ones that came after that, there was a commission book. I'm trying to look at these. The commission book was this. Now, this was amazing because knowing that I am a Wiccan and they didn't know I was a Wiccan, I had to interview Wiccans, and it was called Wiccan Wisdom Keepers, and it was all interesting, amazing people, some of whom have become very good friends of mine. Starhawk was one of them, for instance, and huge respect for her, you know. But I got to, again, write and photograph this book, just handed money to do something that was totally up my street. I had to photograph this one, which was called Witches, because as you can see, there's an alternative theme going on. That was all the photography. And then finally, my other passion, obsession, is yoga. And so I wrote one called Ashtanga Yoga for London. Sorry, for women, not for London. And nobody at that time, it was authorized by Sri Patabi Joyce, who is the guru of Ashtanga Yoga, and I was heavily into it, still am. And basically, nobody had ever written from a women's perspective. So I was interested in the lineage is all men, Brahmin men, and not foreigners, actually, is the history of it. And then who is leading the light in yoga now is Western women, which is so interesting, you know. So that was sort of the spell I had during the yoga and alternative things, just this writing, getting it out. And it was easy. I just used to think of the final, almost like the first page and the last page, and the rest of it just came together. It was just a piece of cake. And I've always said that to people, if you just think about the last thing you want to be saying, that's the book, because you're leading to that. It's, you know, and the same is true with lots of things I've manifested. I don't think about the journey. I think about the very last thing or the almost symbolic thing. So with that book, I thought I could see myself in a what do they call it when you finish? Like a book signing.
Right.
And the clink of a champagne glass going like, yes. And that's how I wrote the book. It was easy and interesting how that works, but nothing to do with the hard slog that some people go through.
That is so inspiring and great for people who are listening who are writers, yeah, and who are artists or anyone to really manifest what you want. I was interviewing a friend yesterday. He's an entrepreneur. He's written a book, The Entrepreneurial Incubator, Secrets to Getting Your Invention from Mind to Market. And I was sharing how my friend's 11-year-old son was saying, oh, Laura, do you know this book, The Secret? Well, it's just really silly, The Secret, because it says if you just envision and imagine what you want, then you'll get it. But really what you want, if you want $1 million, do you just imagine it? No, you really have to work hard for it. And I thought it was really great, his observation. And then his grandmother said, well, there really is something to be said for imagining and manifesting what you want. So we talked about how it can be a bit of both, really. Yeah. That, yes, it would be wonderful that you could just sit and meditate in your garden and go, okay, I want to have a million or millions of dollars, and you know, that's really your intention. And then you're lucky enough that you go out and you buy the winning lottery ticket, which could be great. However, there is really, for me, there's something to be said about hard work, or let's say not hard work, but a project that you put your commitment and your focus into. Because I really think that if it's something that you're passionate about, it's not hard work. You're just loving it and enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, the hardest I've ever worked is right now, and that's on Yoga Connects Festival. Absolutely. Couldn't have imagined how I use all the other techniques, which is the same as the writing, but it's really been intense and full on. And I have never seen anything like it, but you know what, when I'm at it and when I manifest that moment, it is incredible. And I'm aiming that to be something that causes great happiness on the planet. It's a legacy project, so that it never feels like hard work. And I work constantly on it, like every day for one flipping weekend. I can't even believe how much it takes to produce this festival. But that's what it takes. And gradually it's getting easier. This is the third year. And the aim is high, huge. It's aiming to be a massive money-making million-pound project and up. It's also meant to change the concept of what a festival is, so that we become really conscious about all the plastic. Like, it's 100% plastic-free festival. It's aiming, really, the behind the scenes of it is to cause a shift in people, so that when they're actually there, they start to make different choices that make them happier. So that is what it really is about. You know, it's not really about the festival, if you know what I mean. But there is a lot of yoga. There is a lot of gong baths. There are a lot of meditations and shamanic ceremonies. But the aim of it is great happiness. and the money will come, you know.
Definitely, definitely. I really do believe that when you're on your right path, or on the path that the divine wants you to be on, then you're supported by the universe. You're just absolutely 100% supported by the universe. And I was really lucky enough to attend the first Yoga Connects festival. You were really generous in gifting me a place, and you've always been incredibly generous with me. And I think likewise, we both supported each other. And I had an amazing time. I really wouldn't say I'm a festival person. I don't like crowds. And you were saying, have you booked your train ticket? Have you done this? And I said, no, not yet. And then I finally confessed and I said, no, I really want to come, but I don't like crowds. And you said, oh no, it's not going to be like that at all. And you explained how there was going to even be a sauna, and there was a little lake and hot tub area and all these chill out areas, and this at a beautiful house, you know, this beautiful sort of English country estate. And so I said, okay, all right, I'll book my train ticket. And from the start of the journey, I had an amazing time. So I think, you know, I arrived at Euston Station. I just got back from Glastonbury, a place where you and I go, you know, all the time together when I'm in England. And I got to Euston. It was actually a really hot day. And people think England doesn't have summers, but we have beautiful summers.
Yeah.
And
It's boiling
there now. People think, I think because it, you know, we do have the odd day of rain, but it's still great. So I sat down, I got a coffee. I sat down at a table. The station was really busy, but I was outside. And I saw this young man with a backpack, and I looked at him and I thought, he's interesting. He's really an interesting looking man with these piercing blue eyes. And he went into the coffee juice shop, came out, and I'm sitting there, and I don't even have a yoga mat because I've traveled to England without my yoga mat. And he came over to me and said, "Oi, are you going to that yoga festival?" And I was like, "Yes, I am." And it was Brett Moran, who's, and he was coming to practice yoga, but also to be a motivational speaker. And so we just talked all the way, you know, on the train, got a taxi. And the festival, I just loved. If I was in Europe every year at that time, you know, I would definitely be there. And I want to actually plan my future trip so that I can be there. And I just thought, what an incredible job you did, because there's so many moving pieces to put a festival together.
Yeah. Oh, there are. Yeah.
And I think, you know, at this point we can segue into really what you're doing and what I see you as. And you're actually creating a summit right now where you're interviewing people in transformative leadership. So I really see you as a transformative leader in the way that you are organizing this festival, but the message that you're bringing to people.
Yeah. And I think, well, you're right. I am doing a summit, and it's about conscious leaders. I'm very interested in that. I had to think, what is my passion? Because I've done so many of my passions, you know, like I've actually lived a full life. And to digress slightly, I never had anyone who gave me an example that you can do many different things. You know, there's this old adage which they say, you can only do one thing well, so you may as well, you know, focus on it. I never felt like that. I always felt like, actually, you know, I'm that person who can do lots of things well, and it's not even, there's no ego involved, and it's just I don't want to do one thing. I want to do lots of things. And also, I think as I've gotten older, different things call me. And I remember a teacher telling me once that we are, and she was a Wiccan teacher as well, she said, each stage of life is governed by a different element. And so my writing stage was very much my air stage. It was communication, photography as well. It was reaching out, communicating. And if I had to think what this element would be, I think it's probably earth. It's creating an actual physical thing, which many people can come, but it's all about the heart chakra. It's all about causing happiness on the planet. And I had no examples of that. I still don't have many examples of other women, but I do become that example for a lot of younger women. And I am really happy to coach them. So when I was looking, what's my passion to do my own interview series, it was all around leadership. Like, who are these people? How do they get the, you know, the impetus, if you like, to do something so unusual, to just say, like, look at the leadership right now in the world. Dare I say, Mr. Trump, OMG, Jesus Christ. I mean, he's an appalling leader. And he's the head of America. And over here, I don't know how many people, I don't know anyone who is impressed. In fact, they all are just stunned by that form of leadership, you know, bullish, dogmatic, racist, institutional. I mean, he's just whatever. So I don't need to go on about that. But when you look at who are the real inspirational people, I'm impressed by there's that 15-year-old boy who's come up with the plastic removing drag thing. It drags through the water and it sucks plastic in. I don't know if you've seen him on TED Talks.
But I haven't seen him. What's he? But if you don't remember his name.
But yeah. If you look him up, he basically studies the way that water moves in the ocean currents. And you know, there's a plastic island in the middle of the Pacific, which is the size of Wales.
Right. Oh, gosh.
It's that big. And so he said, I have a solution for this. I can see how all this gathering, this, you know, the circuits of the ocean bring the currents together and there's one big whirlpool of plastic. And so he's got these floating things, which are like dredgers. They've got a kind of slow arm. They float around and they just suck all the plastic into it without any motorized nothing. It just moves with the currents and it sucks it all in. Now, then what you do with it is somebody else's concern, right? But that guy, he's a genius. And it's all to do with stepping in. He's young as well, really super young, stepping outside the norm and seeing solutions to things. So I'm very interested in people who are completely solution-based, people who don't ride roughshod over everybody else, they're inclusive, to get their solutions to work for everybody. And these are who I'm interviewing now, and they're just amazing, these people. You know,
you must interview him for your summit.
I must, actually. I've just got a hold of him.
And the other person...
Yes.
And the other person who popped into my mind, who's really a transformative leader, is Malia.
I don't know Malia.
You do. She won the Nobel Peace.
Yes, you do.
I just couldn't remember her last name. And, you know, definitely we could talk about Trump and the U.S. administration. I really feel at this point that it's about looking at the leaders who are transformative. So not looking at the leaders who are the old regime.
Of the
patriarchy. And so people like Malia, completely supported by her family and especially by her father.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing.
It is transformative. And unfortunately, the news, the mainstream media still focuses on what's not working in the world. Yet if you unpack and unlayer and you go to alternative news sources, for example, I don't know if you've ever watched the Young Turks, but they're these young Turkish guys and they are so smart, and you know, they're also it's so intelligent, so well-informed, and again, transformative leaders. So that's why I really feel that what you're doing as this latest project is so important in the world, because we need transformative leaders. We're at a crucial point in our history. And obviously there's always been, you know, there's from the history that we know of, there's been crucial points. You know, we didn't know what was going to happen in the Cold War. We didn't know what was going to happen with the Berlin Wall, the Bay of Pigs, you know, the Second World War, the First World War. Everyone thought that that was it. The world was over.
Yeah.
But right now, you know, we've got up in Antarctica, the glacier splitting. And there are so many things, you know, Trump pulling out of the Paris.
Are you surprised? I mean, it's like, it's an old program which is on, like you've wound up the little robot and off it goes, and it does exactly what you expect it to do. So when people are like, oh my God, it's like, why are you surprised? That's exactly the vibration that he is. However, on the positive, like I said, I'm not really political at all. I'm much more, my politics are more about issue based.
Yes.
He will raise the game so much for everybody else who wants to get rid of him, because he's outrageous. And that's what's going to work. And I actually am a real optimist about it. You can't put a fool like that, like on this world stage, and expect everybody not to think of a solution. That's what's going to happen. You know, we should thank him, bless him. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Because you have decided that your karma is to be such an idiot that everybody else is going to find a way to kind of get rid of you, get rid of your policies, see how bad they are. And it's like a purge. He's the head of a purge, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And again, yeah, it's looking at what does work. And with the summit that's coming up, it really will be you interviewing the people who are part of the big change. And change is going on. And it's the microcosm and the macrocosm of change. So, and within that, there's creativity. So we are creative as individuals. And that creativity is expanding universally. So you're a huge part of that by putting this summit together that is going to be similar to the summit that we're doing right now, that it's free, it's educational, people can just jump in and watch the interviews. And a big part of this is to educate. And that was one reason I wanted to interview you, because you're so inspiring. When you shared that story going back to the writing, where you came up with this idea for the book and went to a publisher, and you had not been published before, so you didn't have a name in the industry. However, you got a publishing deal for £14,000. So, you know, with the exchange rate right now, that's pretty much, you know, $30,000 for an unknown author. And I want to come back to that for people to know that it really is possible. When people might be thinking, you know, I've never written a book, and how am I going to get a publishing deal, because nobody knows my name, etc., that it is 100% possible.
Absolutely.
To do something, you know, to do something like you did and take your book and get a publishing deal. And I think it's being in the right, you know, it can be being in the right time, right place at the right time. But it's also about having a product or having a book, having something that people are really wanting, that the market can see, oh, there's readers out there for this project. And I think coming back to then what's happening right now in the world, even if you're not interested in politics, it's kind of hard to get away from it. But there's a lot of disruption in the world right now. There's a lot of things that can make you absolutely depressed and in despair. I try and avoid the news. However, I don't read it. However,
Dad goes bananas about it. He's like, he's an environmental scientist, very, very big in his world and very intelligent and all of this. And so, of course, he's raised me to be a great thinker, questioner, and all of that. But it's hilarious because I always question him on that. Like, why do you have to read the news every day? And tell me something good that you've read in it. Anything. Because he rants. It's like the direct result of him reading a newspaper is I get to hear about, over breakfast, 10 suicide bombers, all the crap that's going on in the world, shootings in the US, black guys being shot, da-da-da-da-da. And he goes on and on and on about it. And I said to him, could you imagine, like, what it would be like? I said, okay, Dad, here's the last day on Earth. They're going to drop a bomb on us. Now, who's in the better position, you or me? You read all about it, keep up to date exactly when the moment that it's going to land on us, or me. I'm just living my life, and it doesn't mean I'm stupid. It was a very intelligent choice that I made, but I've stopped reading newspapers. I don't have them anywhere near me. Does that mean I don't hear what's going on? Of course not. You can't avoid it. I walk down the street, there's headlines all over the place, and Facebook, of course. But it's a conscious choice that I don't want to fill my head up with that garbage. And you know what? As we know, Secret is perfect for that. What you focus on is what expands. So the more and more people who focus on, bad leadership, like Trump, continuously, you'll get more of it. I focus on great leadership, and that's what's starting to expand in my world. I just meet more and more of them. And they're all of us. It's not like, they're any different. And back to the writing a little bit, how that worked. It's the same philosophy. It's like, if you start to focus on what you're interested in and it expands constantly, I find myself, I'm around people who are just ready to publish me. And right now I'm not writing, but it's interesting because I have an idea now and it came to me, I think about 2 years ago, I thought there was something I want to write about again. And all of a sudden, I start to meet people who can make that happen. Now, prior to that, for at least, I think, about 10 years, I didn't want to write. I really didn't want to write. And it was funny because right around 9/11, there was an interesting story that happened. The final book that I wrote, and fully edited, fully finished, was co-written with another woman. And it was called Rites of Passage. And it was all about the different stages in our lives that are still celebrated with ritual or even things like, retirement or whatever, and circumcision and, all the different cultural kind of things that go on. And I was really proud of that book. Like, it was not hard work. That's the wrong word. But let's say it's the one that I really had to work my butt off to get all the information and co-write with this amazing psychologist. And anyway, it was edited, everything had been paid, and then 9/11 happened. Now, you wonder how that could possibly affect my book on Rites of Passage. The publishers then made another massive decision that what they wanted to do was put their emphasis on, like, healing crises in the world, or politics about, Muslim, Christian, whatever it was, and they literally made a decision at the print press to take the book off, pay me off, and to put all their focus on something else. And you can imagine that was just completely soul-destroying. They had the rights of the book. I'd written the whole thing and photographed the whole thing. It was all ready to go and complete. And they pulled it. We even had the cover. And at that time, I know there's, obviously later if I wanted to have self-published and etc., etc. But actually what happened for me was I felt like, how can somebody have so much control over me at this point when I've done so much hard work that, they take the project and they scrap it for the sake of doing something which is a misery story. Like, it's just misery in the world, 9/11. the good stuff is what's come out of it, and people's leadership and people's extraordinary other journeys. And I had a good friend who died in that, so I'm not sympathetic. But the next thing that happened was it caused me to have, I just thought, you know what? If somebody can just take that, pull the rug out from me, am I in the right alignment for what I want to be doing? And the next thing was I just thought, no. And that was another radical change overnight for me. And I thought, had it with writing for now. I want to do something else. And all of a sudden, the next thing that came to light was property. I had no idea about that. I received an email. It was one not great time in my life. I had just split up with a guy I thought was the love of my life. He had a child. I just lost the sort of the stepmother-y connection. I had dental hell going on because all of a sudden I found out that the dentist I had on NHS dentistry had ruined my mouth. So I was told after having severe pain that all of a sudden you are going to have 7 root canals, you know, a few crowns, tons of money involved in it, you know, real pain. I hate the dentist, but whatever. I've gotten used to the dentist because of that. And it was like an absolute crisis. I couldn't think of anything worse in my life. It was like the worst period. And then they told me the book was stopped. And I was like, you've got to be joking. So again, I thought, well, it was almost like this anti-motivation. It's like, it went like this. Life can't get much worse. So kind of, am I allowed to swear?
Yes.
Fuck this. I'm going to do something else. And it's going to be, and I don't know what it is. But again, it was like this thing. The same way I thought about the writing, I want to do this. I thought, I don't want to do this. I want to do something else. And the surge of energy was so strong. And again, I was randomly sitting on the computer. This email popped up and it was from the, let me remember the name. It was something like the Enlightened Millionaire Institute. That's right. The Enlightened Millionaire Institute. Now, what is that? You know, but I was just suddenly like, I'm at such a low point, and all of a sudden I'm like, wow, this sounds interesting. Enough for me to have the impetus to go, and I had the phone call with them. I had to write tons of things about bizarre things, like what would you imagine in the world if you had $1 million or pounds? What would you do? Some of mine has always been giving it away. And then they phoned me up, and they said, well, the reason why we've called you is because you're one of the ones that said you'd give it away. I want to chat with you. And you're also somebody who is a calculated risk taker, not a risk taker as in, you know, ridiculous, like sports car driving, calculated risk taker. And they spoke to me in the very next day, honestly, again, another speedy kind of shift. I had had enough of working on things that could be taken away from me. And all of a sudden I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I have no idea. I had my friends freaking out. My mother sent me an email or a letter just saying, how can you do this? You're a photographer and all the other things that you do. You are not qualified to do property. And I said, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to learn it. I learned it in 3 months. Next thing, for 10 years, I ran a really strong property company. I made more money than I've ever made in my life. I'm living in one of the flats that was a result of that. And I did 23 projects. And again, it was a very fast decision, but it was, this is working, this path is working, this isn't working, that's a shut path. Okay, go down this way. And it was a bit like, you know, you walk to a fork in the road and you go, I'm going that way. I'm going that way. And I've always been like that. It's like, no, I'm going that way. And losing the identity every time, losing it, because if you hang on to the identity, the writer was, great identity. I loved it. You know, it's great. I'm the writer. The photographer was sexier than that. It was like, ooh, the photographer, you can come in and, you know, make people look good. That was a real identity I had to dump. But the thing about creativity, which you're talking about, is my creativity is not about one strand of something. My creativity is about this accomplished feeling of like, oh, I want to get this out of here. How do I do it? And even business, when I went into business, there was a time when I was, you know, I used to think, how do I look the way I do with these kind of things in a business meeting with the head of a bank. Literally, I used to think, oh my God, I have to wear a glove or carefully put my, you know, like I don't fit. And I just found myself, like, literally with the head of a bank at one point, negotiating and all of this. And I found the creativity was in, again, it was in finance and it was in money. And it was like, how do I, you know, when we got to the level that that company got to, I was being offered, just when the credit crunch happened, £7.5 million to do whatever I wanted with. And it was going up from there, but it was just like that, by the head of a bank. And then the credit crunch happened. And then I got creative again, you know? So I hope that's inspiring to people, because in a way it's like, yes, it sounds like maverick thinking, but what it is, it's like moving with the times, reinventing yourself, not attaching to something. And feeling like, you know, when I die, I will have been many things. I'm not my work, you know.
Right. And that's such an important, for me, when people say, what do you do? They're really asking you, what do you do for money? What do you do for a living? And that doesn't, for me, encompass everything that you are. Like, what do you do? They turn around, well, you know, I do a bit of gardening in the morning. I do my yoga practice before I do my garden. You know, I do my art. I fold my laundry. It's really a bit of all of it. But how we're multi-dimensional beings. And I also heard that most people now in developing countries have 7 career changes, on average, 7 career changes in their life.
Wow.
So just the fact that we can shift from one thing to another, like you did, however, even though you shifted again, and you're not doing property, it doesn't mean that you've built the skills, all those skills that you built, you know, investing in property, renovating them, you know, you're renovating your own home right now. Those skills stay with you and you can apply them to so many things in your life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think this is so much about this interview series of how we're building skills and how we can access creativity and also shift, you know, if we are in a job that we're unhappy with, how can we shift and how can we stay with the belief that we can live the life that, you know, we dream. You know, my main bumper sticker on my car is live your dream.
Yeah.
And I really do feel that it is possible to live your dream. You might have to get incredibly creative and you also may have to put more focus and work into something. For example, I've mentioned many times on these interviews how I follow the book, The Perfect Day Formula, by setting my alarm at 5. I've been a bit naughty lately and going back to sleep and getting up at 5, not 4. But getting up at 4 for me means that I can work on my own personal writing, then start my work day, and then do all the other things that I'm doing. However, it's a sacrifice because I'm, you know, I need to be in bed at 8 o'clock at night. But why I share that is if there are people in the audience and listeners who are in a 9-to-5 job or running a company, that they want to do their creative work, you can find time in the day to do your creative work.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course you can.
And I mean, also the business coaching program that we're both in, well, business and life coaching, I'd like to think of it as life coaching, is really about creating free time and our our coach talks about the flex time, and I've been really seeing how I'm implementing that in my life. And I was just thinking about that with you and I. We've, over the 30 years of our friendship, we've taken some incredible vacations together.
I know.
All over the world, and we have many more to come.
Yeah, absolutely.
Many more to come. And I think this is, for me, the great motivation to stay with my creativity on a daily basis. I mean, even if that means, okay, I'm just sort of arranging flowers in my front yard today, that's how my creativity is. But in the long run, it's really to see my life of freedom and philanthropy. And I know that we're really both on the same page with that.
Oh, yeah, I really am. I mean, yeah, I'm sort of very impressed by philanthropists. It's a natural thing for me. I would say that one of the things that I feel most uncomfortable with is tight people, cheap, non-generous people. Generosity is like, it's just inbuilt in my family, definitely one side of it is just so incredibly generous. They've never had money. They're just so lovely. You know the side it is. It's my dad's side. And it's just like, it's always been there. You know, there's something that's more important for them is connection with people. Then I've come up with the idea of Yoga Connect. Then the summit that I'm doing is called the Connection Zone. So, you know, like you look at what is the thread going on there. And for me, people who are generous with their spirit, with their teaching, and I won't reveal my age, but I look pretty good for my age right now. I teach a lot of much younger people in yoga who have this idea that this is it. There's the peak at about 20, and then this is sort of 30s, and then, you know, and then there's death. And I've said, okay, well, here's my experience, right? 20 was all right. It wasn't really great. I was quite neurotic and unstable. And then 30 was like getting up there, much better and really, you know, amazing yoga practice I developed then. So physically it was really much better than 20. By 40s, we won't go on too much further than this, but 40s, it was getting up there. I had a major, major accident in my 40s and, you know, just wrecked this shoulder and had to come back. And so, dare we say, in the 50s, it's like, I feel like I'm just experiencing incredible physical prowess, if you like. I still feel completely useful. The thing about it is, like, this isn't taught. It isn't taught. You're told the other way around. Like, it's worse. And so I really feel like one of the things that my philanthropy is, it's not just about giving money to things, but I do give money to things. I actually, it's like time and leadership and love, especially to a lot of younger people. I'm surrounded by younger people. I hang out with people who are, you know, often 20 years younger than me all the time. And one of the feeds that we have both is I give them an example of what it's like to be the same in their 20s, but maybe with a slightly steadier head sometimes. And, you know, I don't look like this sort of scary version of aging, like, oh, you know, it all went downhill. It's thriving, vibing, you know, dancing, moving, doing all sorts of things, reinventing, constantly changing. And in a way, that's the philanthropy. It's like to just be excited, you know, all the time about life. And I have to mention, you know, the greatest inspiration to me, of course, is Prince. And when he died, I was like, oh my God, like, come on, you've got to be joking. Obviously, I was really deeply upset by that. But he was, I think, the ultimate example to me of entrepreneurial, philanthropical. He was amazing with race issues, like always keeping that level, not getting, you know, sort of chip on the shoulder, let's always talk about it. He just was this amazing example. And when he died, now it's all coming out, like how much he gave.
Oh, really?
So much.
Really?
Wow. Never, ever taking credit for it, didn't need the you know, didn't have the adulation for it. And when I saw him not long before he died, he looked incredible, incredible. And he moved like he was just like this, you know, sex on legs, obviously, but he did not look like a person who was in pain, who had, you know, kept that very private, obviously. And he was just an amazing, amazing example, reinventing himself continuously, generosity continuously, you know. And that's who is my man on the, when I look to anything, you know, breaking the record deals that he had, which were
right.
Whenever I have to think about business, I just think, what would he do? What would he do? That's my answer to anything. What would Prince do?
And it's
bizarre, but that's exactly what it is. That's my guru, if you like.
Well, we talked about gurus at the beginning and before we were on air. And what did you say that guru translates to?
Remover of darkness.
Remover of darkness.
It's a very different version of teacher.
Right.
Definitely. But it's remover of darkness, it translates to in Sanskrit. And so anyone who removes your darkness for you, or, you know, we were talking about Shanda being
right.
Coach right now. Removing the cobwebs or the things that blind you to see your own light.
Absolutely. And that's, we're actually coming to being chatting for an hour, and it's just really, really fast, because you asked me, you said, how long are these interviews? I said, an hour. You're like, an hour? Happy dinner in the oven. I said, it'll go really fast. And it would be great so we can actually end on that note, and, you know, and it's not the permanent end, because it will always continue. But as a guru, so whoever you want to see that in your life, and I've been talking about the importance of coaches. I coach people with their writing and really on their creativity, not just writing, and really with their life. And I've realized that that's something that I'm really good at doing. You know, I'm really good at holding space for people. And I, likewise, I think you and I have both coached and supported each other unofficially, you know, over the years as friends. And one thing I didn't check in with you about with the interview, whether you had a free gift for our listeners to jump over to your website. And
if you guys want to come to Yoga Connects Festival, that's one thing I could hook up. That is this year, it's a month away, so it's July 7th to the 9th, and it's in the UK, but maybe you have some listeners. I would give definitely a couple of free tickets to somebody, but it'd have to be sort of a competition.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. The other thing, of course, you can have access to the series that I'm doing, which is all these incredible leaders. And who I'm doing is shamans, healers, entrepreneurs, bloggers, people who created travel blogs, somebody who created a, you know, £1 million company of alternative food from their kitchen, that kind of person. And I can just hook you up to that.
That's really super generous. So we'll have a link to your website, and people can come over and check the summit that you're offering for free. And that's really generous about having a couple of places at Yoga Connects Festival. And there are listeners all around the world. So you can come up with a great, great competition for.
They can be my personal invites, and I know what I'll ask. So you'd have to watch the whole interview for this.
But right.
Where did Alora and I meet?
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, that's great. That's great. So the first two people who figure that out, you get to go to Yoga Connects, and it's more than a yoga festival. It's incredible. Oh, yeah. Incredible. Yes. Food and
it's vegan, veggie. It's amazing.
It's amazing, and it's in Glastonbury. So if you've always wanted to go to Stonehenge, Stonehenge is on the way to Glastonbury.
But you're inspiring tons of people. You've coached me, and you are amazing. So, you know, keep it up.
Thank you.
It'll all go.
Thank you. All right, my darling. Well, I'll talk to you very soon. And thank you so much for today. Blessings and love.